You friends them?
No. We chilled them to save you. Can we come down and talk to you?
One of the natives stood, holding a bullet wound in his left forearm.
Come down, kill?
No. We've killed your enemies. We will not kill you or hurt you.
I come.
The other natives also stood, a woman running clumsily across the clearing and throwing herself onto one of the bodies of her people.
Let's go, friends.
The natives were understandably still on the ragged edge of panic, all of them trembling and almost all of them gray with shock. They were obviously the same tribe as the others that the companions had seen earlier, with the same oiled hair, tattoos, and heavy golden earrings. Mildred tore a strip off the sleeve of one of the dead slavers and offered to bandage the arm of the wounded native. But he backed away, shaking his head.
I mean to help you. Now just stand still and I'll bandage it. Clean wound. Looks like it was a musket ball, and it's gone clean on through.
Jack had paused on the hillside to reload his python and was the last of the group to walk into the clearing, picking his way past the puddles of blood. His appearance had a startling effect. The leader of the group, who'd been hurriedly backing away from Mildred, dropped to his knees, his mouth open. Then he fell face down on the grass. Each of the others, as they saw the teenager, followed suit and prostrated themselves.
What the fuck they doing? Stoops?
What the Indians were saying made no sense at all to Ryan. He turned to JB, who just finished reloading the 20-round Uzi.
How do we stop them? I don't want to stay here for long, just in case Bivar and his men heard the firefight and come running to see what's happened.
Jack stepped forward and stamped his foot, gaining the attention of the natives. He gestured to them with his hand.
Get up! Now!
They all stared at him, hesitating.
Try again.
Get up! Come on! Get up now!
Slowly, not looking at Ryan or the others, the natives rose to their feet.
What is this? You all understand me and you can speak American. What is it about Jack? Why is he special?
He is like God in old stories. Back in oldest times, before time of black skies and air that choked.
A god? That's a hot pipe, Jack. Can you make miracles like gods do? Turn water into whiskey?
Shut up, Dean. You might think it's funny, but these people don't.
I suspect that it must be the color of our young friend's hair.
If these people have roots back to the Aztecs or Mayas or Incas, then there could easily be some myth of a stranger with hair like dazzling snow and eyes like rubies, come to lead them to a better world, that kind of thing. It's a common thread in legends of many civilizations.
Cargo cults of the Pacific. There are peoples on obscure islands who once, in wartime, had airplanes bring supplies and the specious trappings of civilization. Then wars ended and the planes went away. These poor, superstitious natives built model planes of branches to try to lure the real thing back and give them prosperity once more.
Why is Jack special?
Can't tell. To tell breaks circle. But he is the weighted one. Can't tell you more.
Mildred stepped forward again, still holding the strip of torn cotton.
Jack, make him stand still while I bandage that bullet wound. Stop the bleeding.
Sure. You. Stand still, and she puts a bandage on your arm. Make you better.
The man shrank from the advancing woman, but his nerve held, and he finally stood still for the bandaging, wincing as though Mildred were applying a poultice of pure acid.
Ask him where his village is, Jack. Tell him we'd like to visit and maybe stay a night or two. Get some food. It'll soon be dusk.
You ask. He speaks all right.
You even sound like they do, Jack. The way you talk, sort of clipped and... What's the word, Doc?
Elliptical, meaning that certain words are missing from the dear boy's sentences.
Fireblast, can we get this done? Dark's not far off. If they'll house us for a while, we need to know. Just ask them, Jack.
We need shelter and food. Can we come back to your village?
The man with the bandaged arm didn't seem enthusiastic at the idea of bringing seven strangers to his village.
All of them? Just you?
No. We are friends.
They are friends of you? You do not have friends. Only those who kneel to you.
No, fucking listen to me. These are my friends. You take us to your village. Find houses for us. Food.
Just you.
No. If you think I'm powerful, then you best do what I say.
The native turned to his companions, drawing them close, speaking to them quickly and quietly in the strange foreign language.
If they decide against us, then I reckon we might do well to go back to the gateway. Take a chance on running into Rodrigo Bivar and his gang.
You and friends welcome us, village.
The village was about 3 miles away, along the winding track, and it was close to full dark by the time that they reached it. Only one thing of any interest happened during the trek along the trail.
One of the natives, wounded by the slavers and left to die.
Ryan drew his Sig Sauer and led the way into the undergrowth. But the man lying there, knees huddled to his chest, was an Anglo, with the same swarthy complexion as the slavers. He was doubled over, blood soaking through his clothes from a deep stab wound in his stomach. The natives gathered around, staring blank-eyed at the dying man. A lone woman stepped close and spat in his face. Ryan holstered his Sig Sauer and drew his long panga, not wanting to waste a bullet on the man when cold steel would do as well. As he leaned forward, the leader of the natives stopped him.
He is taker of us, chainer of women and girls, stealer of men for the holes and tunnels where the silver lives, one who makes sluts of our women.
So he's better dead.
No. He will speak to gods for us. We take him to Teotihuacan, where he will meet Coatlicue, and where he will help bring winning to us.
You want him as a prisoner? Well, I sure don't want him for anything. Take the son of a bitch and welcome.
The wounded man stared wide at the gleaming, polished blade of Ryan's panga. As soon as he realized that he wasn't going to be killed on the spot, his first reaction was one of relief. Then he was jerked to his feet by the natives, his wrists bound behind him with strips of whipcord.
You wait. Don't let them take me. You don't know what they do.
I've seen what your brutish gangs do. Anything that happens to you from these people's going to be triple deserved.
No!
He tried to scream at them, but the native woman stooped and picked up a clump of dirt and grass and rammed it hard into his open mouth, tying it tightly into place with two more of the rawhide strips. Fresh, brighter blood showed against the dark patch where he'd been stabbed, the wound that had obviously resulted in his being left behind by Bivar.
Our home.
The native pointed ahead of them with his good arm.
That is where we will bury our dead ones. We could not carry them now, but in mourning, we bring them to homes.
Ryan had wondered about that, surprised that they hadn't made any effort to bury their own dead. Earlier, the corpses of the slavers had all been dragged together while the male natives urinated on them. Then the corpses had been lifted by wrists and ankles and thrown into the pool.
Look over there.
JB indicated an amazing structure about a quarter mile off, to the right. It was a pyramid, more than 100 feet in height, with steps scaling its four sides. The top was flattened and seemed to have some kind of altar on it. The structure lay to the east of the fenced village, which stood on the edge of a large lake. There looked to be about 70 huts, nearly all of them thatched with wide palm leaves. The light was mostly gone, and the cooking fires looked as bright as diamonds. Ryan sniffed, starting to salivate, scenting the delicious odor of what he guessed was probably roasting pork.
Food smells good.
Meal is for the dead. Those took by slavers are dead to us and to the gods. It is hard for those left behind to walk tear-blinded on path not night or day.
One of the other men with them had run ahead. It didn't take an expert translator to know that he was warning the village about the arrival of strangers, and of the slim youth with eyes like smoldering coals and hair whiter than snow.
Giving us a welcome.
Yeah, we got nothing to fear, son. All we've done them so far is a big favor.
As long as they don't reckon us for slavers.
By the three, it's either the Akond of Swat, or the great Panjandrum, or perhaps it's Atahualpa himself, long dead monarch of the Inca people.
Ryan had been met by some bizarre-looking men and women in his time, but he'd never seen anything to match the arrival at this obscure, isolated village, somewhere in Central or South America. There were eight of them making a stately